Today on the Illini Inquirer podcast, All-American linebacker Jay Layman joins us to break down an actual football game. It's been more than 9 months since we've done that with Jay Layman, and we have plenty to talk about on this one. Some positives on the offense, some explosiveness from Caden Hauser, Khalil Valentine, Colin Dixon, and the crew. We also get his reaction about the new-look offensive line and why Jay is encouraged on that side. But also defensively, some good, a lot of disruption, including one Will Holmes. Matthew Bailey, pretty good game as well, but a lot of linebacker tackling issues. Jay Layman, who's pretty good at tackling here at the University of Illinois, breaks down what went wrong there, what they have to work on, and why he's not pushing the panic button at that level of the defense quite yet. We also preview Duke, big non-conference matchup. That's all coming up next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Welcome to the Illini Inquirer podcast.
All right, it's Monday. That means Jay Layman Day here on the Illini Inquirer podcast. First Monday after a game. Jay, let's go. Let's talk about some actual football we saw.
Oh, it's great to talk about a win, too. I know that wasn't perfect, but hey, talk about a win. Talk about a different opponent you're fighting. And at the end of the day, I know it wasn't perfect, but you're 1-0. And I personally feel pretty good about stuff, but I know there's some fans out there that have some questions.
Well, teach tape is great, Jay. I was going to ask Brett this today. Like, how much weight goes into the evaluation of a first game compared to an entire training camp? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how much does each weigh? Because how much do you put into one game of how much you learned based on what you saw in training camp? So I'm wondering your perspective.
Well, I will tell you what. I always felt like I was a much better game player than practice player. I did my job in practice, but I never made huge plays, I felt like, in practice. Maybe that's because I wasn't maybe the best athlete. We'll get into more of this, to actually stay on my feet and tackle. I always had to leave my feet to tackle because I wasn't a great athlete. And this is a key point we're going to get to, is that sometimes, especially defensive backs and linebackers that want to leave their feet, can't practice that. And so when you can leave your feet, it's a little bit different, and you've been practicing just wrapping up and thudding. So I think there's some difference, but I think, no, you don't throw out the whole body of work for one game, okay, for a number of reasons. One, you've seen him in scrimmages. You've seen him in workouts. You know who this guy is. There's also a body of work of tape of all these guys going back to high school or junior college or whatever institution they're at before. You don't throw that out. Number two, I would say this. This is a lot of the guys' first Division I game. I think it's over 50% of the guys, it's their first game as an Illini. Right? First game with this staff, it was, I know we make it, this could be something, it was really hot out, and they hadn't tackled by much. And I don't care how much you try to mimic it, football is totally different than other sports, is that I would say game speed in football is the biggest difference. I think game speed is always faster for every sport, but in football especially, it's a different kind of speed. And I think you saw that on display, and a lot of mistakes can be explained by that. That's probably not the answer people want to hear, but that's the reality.
So I want to focus on execution for a moment, but this was the first time we actually got to see Bobby Houck's scheme out there, Jay. And I thought it was a little vanilla in the first half. I think he amped up the pressure in the second half. Sure. What did you take away from how he just deploys personnel in a defense?
Well, one, you have a lot of just – when I look at it, you have a lot of guys between 240 and 260, you know, 230 to 260 in that front six. So a lot of interchangeable parts. Number two is, ultimately, I think they accomplished kind of what their general goal is as a defense. They had six or seven TFLs. They caused a sack on that first drive. They're driving. That sack, I think there was a penalty. All these things kind of come together, sets up a punt. They get a good return. That kind of stymied it. They got a pick six with Ishkante, right? So I think this whole notion of, we're not going to be bend but not break, and they boat up in the red zone at times, but we're looking for one or two plays that we can actually hit on with our stunts that can put the offense kind of on their heels and in a very predictable situation where we can pin our ears back and bring pressure and we take away kind of the threat of the run. Because when the threat of the run was gone in the second half, when UAB had the game kind of get away because of a little bit of the double dip action they had, with the Hail Mary and then a touchdown after that, that really changed the way that Bobby Houck could call the game. And he was able to really pin his ears back because they knew they had to throw the ball because they had some success running the football. But overall, I thought we saw what the general thesis of this defense was on display.
Yeah, I need to go back. I should have had this number for you, Jay. But they had 27 pressures, according to PFF. And that's a lot. Like, there's a lot of disruption, a lot of movement up front. Like, so I think, as you said, like, they accomplished that goal of being more disruptive with all that movement, some more blitzing. Sure. But man, there were a lot of missed tackles, Jay, especially on that first drive. PFF had them for 16 missed tackles. Just for context, Illinois averaged about eight and a half missed tackles per game last season. So against a team like UAB, which had some pretty good running backs, like there's a kid from Georgia, kid from Louisiana, Monroe was pretty good. But what issues did you see in just tackling at that second level?
So a couple things. One, I think the first drive was atrocious. I mean, we saw a couple, and I'll just say, James Crutz didn't tackle great that first drive. Some of the defensive backs didn't tackle great that first drive.
We'll go over that on the film, by the way.
Number one, let me give excuses for why that could be, okay? And then let me tell you what I think they could do better. One, lack of live tackling in practice. For good reason. Sounds like they had some injuries. That Jayshon Platt went down in one of them early, and that led to kind of some frustration of like, okay, we're not going to tackle all the way to the ground. I've always said this, and I believe it. I know you'll find coaches that will fight me on this, but I just really believe that tackling is a skill. And if you don't go out and tackle live, it's very difficult just to turn that on a random Thursday night. It's like a three-point shooter. It's like, listen, yeah, don't go out and, you can shoot threes, but like, only off the dribble, or, only when you get a pass, or maybe, only shoot a 20-foot three, not a 22-foot three, right? Like, you have to practice exactly what you're doing in a game to be good at it. And so I think, tackling is a skill. And I think I even felt this, in the bowl game that we had with the Rose Bowl. You have a bunch of time off, and then you have to go tackle. It's hard. Now you're playing a good opponent in USC. I always thought the first game, it's a different speed. You haven't tackled a lot in practice. It's a different speed. It's hot. Things are happening fast. You're running a scheme that you've never run live in a game before, which is a little different. There's always a little bit different look. Yes, you want to get against a scout team. You think you know most of it, but it's always a little different. All those little nuances kind of add up, and you're also playing in front of guys in front of you are not guys you're accustomed to playing in front of, it's because sometimes they're taking a gap and you're taking a gap. And so there was a lot of unfamiliarity in that whole game. But that being said, one thing I didn't think that we did great is, if you look at it, I think the linebackers in particular have to keep coming. And what I mean by that is, I always like a linebacker to keep attacking, even when that offensive player is juking. We saw a lot of breaking down in the hole, and newsflash, the running back's always going to be a better athlete than your linebacker. We saw them break down in the hole and not keep running through the hole and attack that near hip. So you'll see that a lot in the first drive as Crutz breaks down. I would rather have him just keep coming, take a shot, grab a leg, make the running back stop his feet, let the cavalry come home. Instead, we're just getting juked out of our pants and somebody's running through, right? And so it's easier said than done, because it's human nature to stutter and stop when another back stops. But I always think if you can keep coming and attacking, that will help. Number two, I just felt like a lot of times I saw our eyes go down on the tackle. And not necessarily that your eyes are closed. I heard Kerry Davis's comment and whatnot that you shared, but when your eyes go down, your butt goes up. When your butt goes down, your eyes go up. So keep your butt down and your eyes open and wide. It felt like we were getting a little bit over our pads a little bit and kind of, not able to actually see the ball carrier in the proper way. A lot of that is because I think when you're thudding, you have to slow up before you hit somebody a lot of times to wrap them up rather than just go straight through the thigh board, right? Which a lot of times a great tackle is straight through the thigh board and leaving your feet to do so. So that's the technical aspect. That's the reasons why it could have been difficult for these guys. At the end of the day, that wasn't good tackling. I think Brett knows that. I think Bobby Houck knows that. And I think they're going to clean it up.
How do you clean it up mid-season, Jay? I mean, because I don't see live tackling to the ground with their starters.
Well, here's what I would say. They're going to get their live tackling in the game. And I would say live tackling improved each quarter, honestly. Like, you saw each quarter them get better. Now, here's the deal. You'll always tackle better when you have a bead on what type of play is going to run or pass, right? Because you're already anticipating. So I feel like they played better defensively because they kind of had a lead, right? But in a game where it's going back and forth and they can run and pass, they're going to have to get better at playing both those. And I would say this, I think they'll be much better tackling this next week. And I think they'll improve to tackle. I just think I'm not willing to say, oh my gosh, we're so bad at tackling. And James Cruz has made a lot of tackles since he's been here. Matt Grzegorz has made tackles. These guys didn't forget how to make tackles. Is there a little rust there? Yes. Have they not tackled as much in the offseason, according to Brett? Yes. I think we'll make a big improvement, and I'm not totally alarmed. I thought the first drive was atrocious, really, really bad, but I thought it improved from there.
Jay, there were some positives on the defensive side. Will Holmes looked like a revelation, man. Utah State transfer, 24 years old, former baseball player, only a third year of football, but he looked like a Big Ten difference maker. 7 pressures in that game. He forced the pick six for Ishkante. So what stood out to you about Will Holmes?
I think Will Holmes and his one, the fact that it's only his third year of football and he's 24 years old. I mean, we have kids that have been playing football since 5 and 6 years old that aren't as good as Will Holmes. Kid's a gifted guy. He's probably just scratching the surface of what he could be. Will, I think, was a little bit bigger, a little bit faster than I actually thought he was going to be when I actually saw him on tape. And one thing I thought he played with extremely, extremely good leverage. He's got a lot of bend to him and plays with a lot of extension, is what you want on the D-line extension. I mean, plays with his hands well. And he's tailor-made for this scheme. A lot of stunting, a lot of slashing into different gaps. And we've talked about it before. When you talk about a defensive lineman, you're talking about not necessarily stats, but how much can they disrupt? He is a huge disruptor for this team. And I think he's the guy in the front six that really stood out to me as, okay, this guy is a guy that could start on multiple Big Ten teams and is probably has a chance to be an all-conference player if he keeps with that production that he had.
Anyone else stand out to you on defense?
I think Pat Farrell's really solid. You know, I think that he adds some of the size that maybe we're lacking a little bit. I think Ian Ray is going to be a good football player. I really do. I had not heard much about Ian, but when I watched him play, there's a reason he was a D2 All-American, and he produces. I think Ian Ray, out of all the backers, is a guy that I thought, he felt like he was – at the speed of the game it needed to be. I didn't feel like Mason Moragan, Kreutz, Bierman, even Jack Parrish. Is it Parrish or Parrish?
Parrish, yeah.
I didn't feel like they played at the speed of the game. It felt like they were a step slow. It felt like they weren't ready for necessarily a full-out live night game against an opponent, where I felt like Ian Ray was at the speed of the game, along with Will Holmes. And so I could see Ian Ray get more playing time, honestly.
Yeah, Ray and Holmes played a lot of football. Maybe not at this level, but Holmes has played a lot the last 2 years at Utah State.
This is the thing. You get better when you play live football. And this is the whole thing about the transfer portal. And we talked about quarterbacks and whatnot. Caden Hauser, we're getting to Caden Hauser, but Caden Hauser's performance was a guy that's played a lot of football. Right. We could have, I guarantee you, we could have had the most heralded quarterback recruit come in and play the first snap and he wouldn't look like Caden Hauser because he had that kind of experience. And I think we're seeing this in the transfer portal area where and Cignetti's at Indiana's been big on this. Hey, wherever you produce, I mean, where did Elijah Surratt to, like, St. Francis? Then he transferred to JMU. And, you know, you are where if you produce at the college level, because high school is very difficult. There's so many different factors. It makes it hard to tell us, is this guy really a good player that's playing at a 3A school that maybe couldn't play at an 8A school at the same level in high school? I'm talking the state of Illinois here. But if you put it on tape and are productive at the college level, that's a different thing. And I think we've shifted to building teams year by year rather than a program, right? So, like, the programs are, who are my freshmen that I'm kind of building up? They're not going to be ready, but they're going to be ready in 2 or 3 years. I think we have to have some of that. But you also have to have the injection of guys that have playing experience.
Yeah. Secondary didn't get very involved in this game. We weren't a lot of downfield passing. I thought Burton made a couple nice plays. Matthew Bailey certainly had to clean up a lot. I thought he did a pretty dang good job of it.
I think Matthew Bailey should teach tackling to the entire team.
Whew, he made some hits, Jay. What do you want to see from that group moving forward? And you can expound on Bailey if you want.
Yeah, one, I think that Matthew Bailey, he's always been a tremendous tackler. He really has. He struggled early on in his career with coverage, especially on the tight ends. But this is why I was so excited about Matthew Bailey, because I think he really brings a physicality on that back end that's missing. You know, Xavier Scott had some cramps and stuff. He was okay. He didn't necessarily flash to me, but I think he's going to be a good player. I was a little bit surprised that it looked like Cox and Jaquan Morris shared reps. I like the way that Cox bounced back after the play. I think that shows a lot. Nick Hankins certainly looks the part. I don't think we've seen a corner that looks like that maybe since, you know, Vontae Davis. You know, he's bigger than Vontae, though. He's a big corner. And I'd be surprised if they're able to keep him off the field. You know, Mac Resetich had some trouble tackling, but Mac, I think, is definitely athletic enough, needs to tackle a little bit better, but I think they're pretty solid on the back end. I really do believe that. And that's going to be the strength of this football team as we've known.
It's a new season of Illinois football. That means you need new gear. You need to refresh that wardrobe. And if you're an Illini fan, you already know Game Day Spirit is the best place to pick up Fighting Illini merchandise in town and online. And GameDaySpirit.com is loaded with fresh Illini gear, including Final Four gear to commemorate Illini basketball's great run, new Illini football t-shirts, and, of course, all the latest NIL gear. You can get merch of the 100-plus players on the Illini football roster, including jerseys and jerseys. Game Day Spirit makes it easy with their amazing product selection and two convenient store locations in town at the corner of 6th and Green in Campus Town and at the corner of Neil and Kirby in Champaign. You can also shop with them online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. Now, just for Illini Inquirer listeners, they're offering an exclusive discount off your next online purchase with them. Use code GAMEDAY15 at checkout for 15% off your next purchase online at GameDaySpirit.com. That's code GAMEDAY15 for 15% off your next order at GameDaySpirit.com. Brought to you by our good friends at the official fan store of the Fighting Illini, Game Day Spirit. All right, Jay, let's switch to the other side of the ball, offense here. What were your impressions of Caden Hauser's debut? 13-17, 182 yards, 3 passing touchdowns, and ran it pretty well, 29 yards and a touchdown.
He just looked so comfortable. He was not uncomfortable the whole time. Very poised, very control, very steady. And, you know, I don't know if that comes from Barry Lunny or just the personality of these quarterbacks, but what we've seen with all the quarterbacks under Lunny is they kind of have this demeanor of they're very steady and not too high and not too low. And one thing I liked is that you can tell his timing, his internal clock to get the ball out is really good. I mean, balls were on time. And if they have a free access throw, you'll see the first throw maybe of the second half to Hudson Clement. It's just, we're just going to take it. If they're going to give us a 7-yard throw, we're going to take it and they're going to bang it. Right. They didn't stretch the field that much. I don't know if that was more of a personnel or you know, what the defense was giving him, because there was a lot of slants. There was a lot of hitches open. But he looked really, really good. I know we had heard that he runs the ball. He's a big guy when he gets rolling, too. He's bigger than you think, and was able to get the edge on that one run down the right sideline. So I was thoroughly impressed by him. I don't know if you could ask for anything more out of Caden Hauser. And, you know, I read a Michigan State tweet like, oh, just another Michigan State quarterback started another Big Ten school, right? So it makes sense that he's a good player. So I think Illinois hit on the quarterback.
Well, yeah, and four incompletions, Jay. Two were throwaways where he got pressured, and two were drops. So pretty efficient day for him. And the one issue I had – yeah, the one issue I had, Barry, let that big guy run on fourth and one. Can we do the quarterback sneak again? I think everyone knows Jordan Anderson's getting the ball on fourth and one now.
Here's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see a little tush-push with Jordan Anderson, pushing Caden Hauser. Or possibly Caden Fagan pushing Caden Hauser. I think that would be a pretty tough play to stop. Hauser's a big guy. And I think if you run behind Renfro and Matalau, who I was impressed with, I think it would be an easy pickup.
Colin Dixon has the trust of Caden Hauser. I think that was pretty clear. Sure. Six catches, 70 yards, six targets, caught all of them. I just think he's in for a big year, Jay. He's just so steady, man.
You know, I'd say this about Colin Dixon is he's a little bit better route runner than you think he is. He's got a little bit better hands than you think he has. He's a little bit faster than you think he is, and his catch radius is a little bit better than you think. And so you put all those little bit betters together, you know, he probably in a lineup of, you know, backyard football may not be the first guy that you say this is the guy, but you add all those things up, and he's a very, very consistent player and has the trust of Caden Hauser. And I think he does a good job for not being a burner or an overly bigger guy of getting open and catching the ball and being sure-handed. And you can see this progression with other receivers in the Illinois program. We saw Pat Bryant, you know, become that guy as after a limited role as a freshman and sophomore. We've seen development as you stick around. We've seen Hank Mady be that guy. It did seem like they were a receiver or two short of what they needed. And that was pretty obvious to see. And so it makes you wonder, you know, with Perry out for an extended amount of time, and we don't know if Platt is week to week or not. We certainly hope that's the case. What will happen? So they definitely need a weapon or two more.
They played four wide receivers. Ty Robinson played two snaps. One of them was the Hail Mary that he caught. But Braden Trimble got into the game for 29 snaps. I mean, they went 11 personnel, a little bit more than I thought, and went a little less 12 personnel. Like Caden Fagan only playing 12 snaps was a little surprising to me. Devin Stoffel played 11. So what'd you make of the personnel use? Obviously very thin at wide receiver.
Yeah, I thought, I don't think that Barry was able to show half of his game plan. I mean, they had 40-some plays, right?
44.
That can be a half sometimes, to be honest. So I don't think they showed a lot. It's tough to get, you know, it's tough to kind of get a grid on it. And it was good that they had some big plays, right? But I do think that they'll be intentional about getting Caden Fagan his first catch at tight end this week. I also think that Braden Trimble shows ability. He's just young. And it's, again, it shows the inexperience of different things on certain players and how important game experience actually is. But they're going to have one, two, or three guys step up if Platt and Perry are out. And I don't know who that's going to be, but they're certainly missing some weapons. If you get against better teams, there could be a lockdown. And I do think, depending on the game, if they want to run some clock, give the defense some rest, we will see some 12 personnel a little bit more with Stoffel, with Abney, maybe with Caden Fagan as well, and roll with that.
Run game started extremely well. Two explosives right away for Khalil Valentine there, Jay, including the 51-yard run, which you love to see him finish that run. Faded after that in the final three quarters. Obviously, you got a lead. They knew you were running a little bit. But what'd you make of the run game, offensive line, running backs, all of it?
Well, I think one thing we talked about Khalil Valentine was he needed to get better with his patience. And I think we saw that in the second run. While he was very, very patient, allowed Michael Matalau to get up to the second level, which was – really, really good to see. So do I think Khalil Valentine can be a 1,000-yard back? I do. I think he can be that. I think he has the explosion to do that. I still like Aiden Loughrey. Sometimes it feels like Aiden Loughrey may need a little bit bigger of a hole than Khalil Valentine, but has a little bit more freight to him when he gets going. Also a good receiver. out of the backfield, as we saw. And so I feel good about the running back position. I actually feel really good about Renfrow and Matalau. I thought Renfrow looks the part. He's a physical wide center. He's a wide dude. And Matalau. And I think that's where they have the ability to really get to the second level. I thought Knapkick, is it Knapkick?
Knapkick. I thought he had a rough game.
I don't think he played like he played in the bowl game. I think he struggled with some of the speed on the edge, which made Kuytenhauser flush and scramble. I think he's got to be better. So I'm concerned there. The Brandon Henderson injury, I don't have an update on that. I don't know where we're at with that. But, TJ McMillan's a good replacement for the guards and the center, but I don't think he's at the same level as a starter, hence he's a backup, right? And I think he struggled a little bit with some of the power that he felt in there. I think Christian Martin's a guy that he's got a huge ceiling. I think he's got to get there. He's still developing, but I think he's got a huge, huge ceiling. But in my mind, when we saw it on fourth and one and with Jordan Anderson, they want to run behind Matalau and Renfrow. That's what they feel like they're going to do. And that's probably where the sneaks will come in the future as well. So I think it's good, though. You didn't feel like there was any pressure on Kuytenhauser. You didn't feel like he was rushed at all. And so this is a team, remember, that really struggled with pressures and negative plays in the run game. And we didn't have that. So it's not all bad. And I think for four starters being brand new, this was not a bad performance. I would say it's a really solid performance. I think they'll be tested against Duke. But that being said, I was pleasantly surprised, although I'm worried about the right side of the line, as I feel like that is going to be targeted against Duke. I could see a lot of pressures coming from that right side with the injury to Henderson and Knapkick struggling.
Yeah, I thought Christian Martin actually showed more physicality than I thought he would. So that was good to see. I think he's going to have some ups and downs, but there's a load of talent there. The right side. I thought the right side was a lot more inconsistent in that game in both aspects. So it'll be interesting to see going up against Duke. And you're right, we'll find out in a couple hours here as we're recording this about Brandon Henderson, who got rolled up on late in the game. Inconsistent, Jay, but boy, he's a big athletic dude, Brandon Henderson.
He really has great feet for a big guy and can really grind. And, it'd be a loss if he was out for an extended period of time. So let's hope that he's not. I think he's the one guy that has real game experience, at least in this Barry Lenny system. But I give Brett credit, and of course he's got to face better defenses, of them putting together an offensive line with – basically three transfers, a returning starter, and a guy they developed, because that was a huge question mark going in. And they've also put a quarterback as well. So to have an offense that replaced four starters, a quarterback, lost what I would say was their most productive receiver last year in Hank Beatty, to put up 42 relatively effortlessly with 44 plays. Guys, we've seen some bad offenses in Illinois. I was very happy with what I saw.
I agree. Special teams?
And just watch a little bit of college football. I don't know if you watched the Michigan game, which is a whole other topic. I'm not talking about the end of the game. We're talking about atrocious offense. Like I watched Michigan, and it was atrocious with arguably better athletes than Illinois. We can go back and forth. With a higher-rated quarterback than what Illinois has, we can certainly go back and forth, and I'm not sure Underwood will ever be a quarterback. But just go look around. If you're an Illinois fan, go look around the Big Ten and actually look at offenses, and you'll be very happy with what you see at Illinois.
I'm not going to put the guy's name out there. I got an email, Jay, complaining about Barry Lenny after this game. And I was like, listen, we can nitpick fourth and one call. We can nitpick not getting Caden Fagan the ball once. But, like, we are nitpicking. Like, we are not that far removed from terrible offensive play.
I remember the first year that Brett was here, we celebrated when Peters got a completion against Nebraska. He was like, oh, my gosh, we could throw the ball. Like, we threw the ball, like, one time to get a catch. So we've come so far And honestly, you can just look in the Big Ten. You can name certain teams. We won't go through it. But I bring up Michigan because it's the most obvious. And I would say Oregon even struggled at times against Boise State. If you watch, considering all the athletes they had, they didn't start really, really fast or play that great. So I really feel like our offense, for all the transition that's gone through, is actually in a decent place. I want Illinois fans to know that that was a weird game for an offense to only have 44 plays. Really, really weird. That being said, they'll have more plays against Duke, and it'll be a bigger challenge.
All right, before we get to Duke, special teams. It was a positive, Jay. Two good returns that set up some scores. Ethan Machowski, 6-for-6 on his kickoffs and touchbacks. The first extra point was get a little too close, but Lars Rouse punt, not great hang time. But first game, special teams, huge question for both of us, Jay, and I thought it was a positive for Illinois.
Yeah, and hats off to it's Chris Hurd, right? He's the he was the coach that was elevated, was an assistant under Disher, and I think Resetich set the tone, number one, which was great to see him back. You know, people forget he was the number one punt returner before he fumbled against Kansas. I think he dropped two or something, and then Hank Beatty, you know, the rise of Hank Beatty. But that being said, he looked. You know, I also remember the days where we, outside of Mike Dudek, never had a punt return past 2 yards. Like, I remember those days as well. So I was happy about that. The punt team didn't look great when they were backed up. They had a backed up punt and, you know, had a good return. UAB had a good return. But kickoff looked solid. The snaps, for the most part, solid. So I think I feel good about that now, right after that game. I do think it's going to be a critical thing in these. What's Urban Meyer call it? Talent equated game. I would say Duke is a talent equated game. They've got similar level talent to us. And, you know, really who's going to play and prepare better and get coached better. And I think that's what's exciting about this week.
Guys, with fall season here, I am on the road a lot. So my routine takes a lot of a hit, especially on the weekends following Illinois football around. And that's where Factor comes in. Makes eating real food and eating well a lot easier. Factor makes chef-crafted, dietitian-designed, ready-to-eat meals so you don't have to choose between real food and convenience. With over 175 banned ingredients, every Factor meal is designed around what supports a healthier lifestyle and what doesn't. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes and require no prep and no cleanup, so even on the days your schedule is completely out of control, eating well is still achievable. Every week, you'll find over 100 nutrient-dense menu items to choose from and new options like salmon burgers, shredded pork, collard greens, and more. Plus, add-ons you'll crave like pumpkin-flavored cheesecakes and protein shakes. 97% of users that Factor meals help them live a healthier life. 97% of users agree that Factor meals help them live a healthier life, so you can feel confident you're doing something good for yourself with every meal. So let's eat real. Head to factormeals.com/Illini50off and use code Illini50off to get 50% off and one free breakfast item per box for 1 year, while supplies last until October 31st, 2026. That's code Illini50off at factormeals.com/Illini50off at factormeals.com. See website for more details. All right, let's preview this Duke game, Jay. Duke ran the ball really well against Tulane. Nate Shepard ran for 227 yards. It was a 17-3 win. But their quarterback, big downgrade, not a surprise. Darian Mensa goes to Miami, looks fantastic. Walker Egitt is not that. He was 13 of 26 for 138 yards in his debut against Duke. So what do you think Hauk has to work on going into this game against a Duke team with a good running attack?
Well, here's what I'll say too, is there are run stopping pressures and there are pass rush pressures. So not all pressures are the same. Now, one thing I failed to mention is that sometimes when you're in a run stuffing pressure, you're coming downhill and you could maybe miss a guy here or there. I didn't necessarily see them miss tackles on run stuffing pressures. The good thing about run stuffing pressure is you can create a negative play. The bad thing is you can give up very big plays. And I think if you're Bobby Hauk, you've got to figure out, okay, the strength of this football team is running the football. Last year, it felt like Mensa was the strength and that we were not going to let Mensa beat us with his arm. We were going to let them run and do all kinds of different things. So if that's the strength, how do we get them in obvious passing situations. And I really feel like that starts on first down. So I think the first down pressures, if they're going to do movement, what are you going to do on first down? Because you know they're going to run the football, and they've seen a decent amount of your stuff. Not a ton. I'm sure Bobby Houck has a lot more stuff. And I would say this, we've got to be better at running our pressures as well. I thought that, you know, you have to be really sound on your gaps when you're running pressures on a run stunt like that to stop. So I think figuring out what are the run stuff and pressures we got to do to move and to give us an advantage. I think we'll get a few plays, but I think Duke will have a few big explosive run plays. That's just who they are right now. And our defense lets that happen. Can our safeties, though, which Matthew Bailey was able to do this and other DBs, clean it up after 15 yards? We had a lot, gave up a lot of 15-yard runs. No 40-yard runs. Can we clean it up and live to fight another day?
Manny Diaz, that aggressive defense, has been really, really good for them at Duke. They had 7 TFLs, 3 sacks, just 3 points allowed to Tulane. So that defense, I know Illinois ended up with 45 points, a lot because of some turnovers and Luke Altmyer got going in the second half. But that defense gave Illinois fits in the first half last year. So what's the key going up against his scheme?
Well, I think Manny Diaz is always true to who he is, and that is he's going to bring pressure at a higher percentage than most head football coaches and most defensive coordinators. I think they pressure like 50 or 60% of the time, something crazy last year. And they were very successful in that first half against Illinois, bringing pressure, getting in Luke Altmyer's face. It felt like there was no time. They're certainly going to test this offensive line, especially on the right side where they know there's an injury and they saw some struggle at the right tackle position. I think they're also going to force our backs to block. Can they block? Can Caden Fagan block? They're going to force us to block. I think you'll see, at least initially, Barry Lunney do one of two things. One, he's going to get the ball out very quick. That is exactly what Caden Hauser is going to do. He can get the ball out quicker than almost anybody with his release. Number two, you could see a little bit of max protection where we go in 12 personnel and we only have who we feel good about. You have Braden Trimble, but you feel really good about Hudson Clement. You feel really good about Colin Dixon. Do you have a little max protection, little play action to Khalil Valentine, and do a two-man route where, hey, let's hope Colin Dixon and or Hudson Clement get open and give us some time in that max protection where you have two tight ends and running back also blocking with those 5 offensive linemen, give us a chance to take a shot down the field. So I'm imagining that's probably what it's going to be. And also the quick timing. If there's a free throw to take, they're going to take it in this Illinois offense.
Jay, this Duke game, it's just game 2, but what's this game mean for Illinois in its season?
You know, I think you can always make a game bigger than it is, but I would say this is kind of a signpost game of that will tell you what you can expect from Illinois moving forward in the season. And they can improve, or they could, you know, maybe stay the same. They're going to improve throughout the year, most likely, as most Brett teams do. But this is a team where you feel like you are at least you're even with them. These are whether they earn it or not, they're ACC champs, right? And so if they lose this game, the season is certainly not done. But it definitely was a game that if you're Illinois fans, you're thinking, this is a game that we need to win, because if we want to get to 8-9 wins like we have the previous years, and we can't beat Duke at home where we've been really good, that could be a challenge. And so do I think it's a must win? No, I certainly don't. But it's certainly, with all the turnover they've had and all the talk of 2023, this is one of those games that could be a signpost, much like Kansas was a signpost in 2023 when we went to Kansas. Oh, man. You know, we went from having the best defensive backs in the country to getting thrown on for 400 yards, and it looked horrible. So I think they're aware of that, and I think they'll be ready. I think being at home helps as well.
Yeah. Jay, before I let you go, got to ask you about the end of the Michigan game. I just felt so terrible for Western Michigan. They deserved to win that game. But what was your take on Michigan's struggles? I mean, regardless of them getting a win, which is big for them, they looked terrible in that game. And then just how the end of the game happened with the review.
So, one, Michigan looked like a program that was lower to mid to lower level of the Big Ten. Looked like they were not coached up very well. There was a lot of mental errors. I thought at least to be able to run the ball and play defense. I mean, defense, they're okay. Now, Western Michigan, it's a team Illinois is familiar with. Illinois beat Western Michigan. I think they won like 10 in a row after that Illinois game. Mm-hmm. Illinois had a pretty difficult non-con schedule actually last year, which was interesting. You know, they beat Duke, who was ACC champs, and then, you know, Western Michigan. But Michigan didn't look good. They have athletes certainly all over the field. I don't think they're necessary. They don't seem to be at the level of physicality that they were under Jim Harbaugh. They had two or three years there with Blake Corman, a big offensive line and a defense under some great coordinators. Now in the NFL with Mike McDonald and Jesse Minter, that simply was dominant. We don't see that in Michigan. I think they're probably finished 8th to 12th in the Big Ten, right in the middle. I don't think they're that good of a football team. Now, as far as the last call of the game, I've seen all the explanations and whatnot, but here's my beef is the clock that we see in the stadium or on the TV broadcast, it has to be sunk up to the clock that the replay officials are using, or else we just see a lot of distrust, a lot of talk of conspiracy. I know you've talked about the ACC and how transparent they've been, opening different things up. And I think this opens the door probably for the same thing to happen. The fact that we have a clock for replay that is 3 to 5 tenths different than the clock that is in the stadium, it makes no sense. And there couldn't be a worse way to find that out if you're Western Michigan than that play. And so I think it's pathetic. I think it's, if I'm a player for Western Michigan, I still don't buy the whole thing. I really don't. Even though I've seen the tape of the back office and the different timing, I think that who knows, that could even be doctored. It took 2 hours to get that tape, you know?
So that's my thing about what the ACC is doing, Jay. The Big Ten, like they might be doing this by the book. Western Michigan seems to be not happy about it, but at least the Big Ten was, out front with this with them. But like, you invite all of us to have these conspiracy theories or to think that something is amiss. Like, if you do that live, I think we're all like, wait, how is that happening? We'd have questions, but at least we'd see it in real time to right. Where we're not questioning it. It's like, okay, we're hearing exactly what's going on. We see what theirs is. Like, it just takes so much out of that. And I think it's the smartest thing to do is be transparent. Those guys can handle it. We can handle it. Right. I think it needs to be the way moving forward.
It's brutal. I mean, and what's crazy is that there's so many things for Western Michigan. If that guy's inbounds when he catches it and doesn't step out of bounds, if they just let the ball fall to the ground, it probably doesn't hit. I've seen some that people says that the ball actually hits the goalpost, which actually would have it out. So like I've seen different things all over the place because it invites conspiracy when you are not clear on different things. But that being said, I thought Michigan looked pretty darn average.
Yeah. I just feel now like I usually don't like get my emotions. I felt so bad for Western Michigan.
I felt horrible for them.
They deserve to win that
program game. Historic win to beat Michigan if you're Western Michigan for any MAC team at Michigan and that happens. It was really sad to see.
Jay Lehman, you're the goods. We'll recap a Duke game for Illinois next week. We appreciate it, man.
Let's go.
Great stuff from Jay Lehman. Always appreciate his insight. And if you want more Jay Lehman, which why wouldn't you? We recorded our film room as well this morning, so we'll have that up on our YouTube channel and the website on Tuesday morning. Get the idea of, you know, get the visual along with Jay's breakdown of the linebackers, the tackling, and some good defensive line play as well. So go check that out at IlliniInquirer.com and on our YouTube channel. We appreciate you listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on YouTube. Hit that like button, subscribe, and hit the notifications bell. And if you're just listening on the pod, go like our YouTube channel anyway. It really, really helps us out. The biggest thing that helps us out is our VIP members. You guys are the lifeblood of what we do. We appreciate you. We try to give you even more insight from us, even more interaction from us on the premium board all the time. I'm doing halftime observations, pregame observations for you guys, and we'll have our three takeaways and three stars up immediately and position grades after the game. And if you're not a VIP member, if you just support us on the podcast, we appreciate you guys. If you just support us on the YouTube channel, we really appreciate you guys. But VIP members, that's how you can support us at the next level and can allow us to continue to do what we do and do it even better, add more people. We're excited about Noah Cowell joining us next month. Your support on all those different ways, all those different channels we're on is great, but the VIP subscription is what really, really supports us. So if you're not a VIP member now, sign up before Tuesday night because that is when our 75% off deal expires. It is our best deal of the year. You save $100 in your first year, so it's $3 a month of the most in-depth insights, analysis, recruiting scoop, all of that at IlliniInquirer.com. So don't miss out. If you're not a VIP member, please consider signing up this month. But for Jay Layman, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Crowned its winner. Now, the champions play.
Oh! It's the Champions League!
We're the best players.
It's Haaland!
From the best clubs.
Paris Saint-Germain take the lead!
Collide from September to June.
Brilliant play!
And every match.
An immaculate save!
Is paramount.
This is the moment!
This is the world's best soccer.
They've waited for so long!
The UEFA Champions League. Stream every match live, exclusively on Paramount+.